Let's move on. And Christian, I'm going to start with you because I think you're the one who can probably fill us in best. Can you just describe to us with Thomas? Yes, with Thomas. Let's actually get the battleship up there. Just, if you would, without offering a critique or a defense, if you could just describe to us some of the background, the intentions. What is this show about?
I think it's sort of about problematizing photography, even though I'm not sure he would necessarily even put it that way. All the photographs are very large format, which, you know, isn't clear from the JPEGs or from that. And they require quite a bit of manipulation in at different stages, or some at one stage and some at another. There are a couple of pictures that are really about sort of taking day for night kind of situations. Old sort of film term where, you know, you basically sort of photograph or you film something in the daytime and then you basically go back and either do post-studio mucking around and make it look like night, or you do it in a film where essentially sort of it looks that way, tungsten or something else. Some of those are quite impressive because the level of detail that you get from those night images, you know, is, like I said, pretty impressive. Or you get very prolonged exposures, sometimes several days of exposure, if I remember this correctly. Or you get a lot of, as it were, post-production, which this picture, apparently, not apparently, it has tons of, though it doesn't look like it to the naked eye. I can explain more, but maybe I'm going over. Should I explain what the exact sort of like...
Yes, give us an intimation of it.
Right, so he made up this project about camouflage, which used to basically protect ships during World War II and after from being torpedoed in the high seas, right? And, you know, so the people, including a couple of vortices, apparently were brought in to the British Royal Navy to design designs that would freak out whatever the German U-2 boats that were out there trying to sink them. And, you know, they came up with these designs. Apparently that design doesn't exist anymore. He went out after looking for those designs or looking for boats that where they existed. They no longer exist. So he found a boat that would have been one of those commissioned with camouflage. I think, if I remember correctly, this is in Lake Michigan somewhere. And basically, in post-production, applied the camouflage to it. He also sort of applied a different mountain range to it in the back. The thing that looks like a shore in the front really isn't a shore. Essentially, it's, you know, it'd be kind of cheap to say it's Photoshop, except for when you actually look at the thing, it gives no evidence of the stitching that you would imagine that Photoshop sort of gives you, right? You know, I think my tendency is to come at photography that's digitally manipulated and imagine that I'm going to be able to see right away where the stitching is, you know? And in this case, you just don't see it. And that's fairly remarkable.
It's remarkable. It's interesting that we're looking at a second exhibition now, one following on the heels of the other, where we are marveling and seem to be enjoying the tours de force. And yet, what's getting lost here, and whether you call it mannerism or baroque is an interesting distinction. But we're losing, aren't we, some sense of truth to materials? I mean, both artists are pulling off a sort of spectacle for us. They're playfully kind of tricking the eye and delighting us in the process, it would seem. But am I the only Puritan here who sometimes yearns for art where the actual material process is very evident and maybe more honest? Harag?
Well, I mean, what was it, a few years ago, I was doing some research on Thomas, and I have to say I really enjoyed the show up front. Yes. Like, I actually, I'm going to show my hand and say out of the four shows, I think it was the strongest as a unified show. But he showed with Jeff Wall, and I think that kind of gives you a sense of what we're dealing with here in this terms of a staged scene that's supposed to get at a deeper truth. And I mean, I think it's pretty clear that something is staged in the photographs, even when you don't realize how manipulated they are, because I think some of them, especially the night scenes, have multiple exposures. So there are these things that go on. So you can kind of tell because the light's not quite there, and there's like, and I think that's actually something else with Allison's show that I never brought up, was the fact that there's something about the light in her work that I can't put my finger on, but doesn't feel natural. And I think this show has a similar ethereal quality about it, where the light seems off. And it's either things are sort of too bright or too dark, or you know, where there's a funny relationship where things flatten out a little bit in some places. So, I mean, I don't mind an image being manipulated. You know, in this case, I think that staged feeling comes out. I think it obviously would be a problem if he was saying they weren't manipulated. You know, but I think that's actually part of the sort of the surprise. And I have to say, the display in the big gallery at Mark Strauss with the light, walking in was, I think, you know, as good as it kind of gets when you're walking to a gallery and you see those big photographs. I mean, I think it was really beautiful right. with the light.
Yeah. Christina, are you troubled by the... it seems to me the heavily staged quality. And mentioning Jeff Wall is right on target. The artists who came to my mind was Gregory Crutzen. These Gregory Crutzen, but without the action. They seem to be to me very heavily orchestrated experiences. Orchestrated, but without a finale. To me, did you get the same kind of positive feedback from these as Harag and Christian?
Yes, yeah, very much. And I wasn't familiar with this artist's work, so it was a wonderful surprise, this show. I agree, I think out of all four, it was, you know, probably the most coherent and the strongest show I've seen in a long time, actually. And no, I'm not the least bit troubled by the orchestration. If anything, I think it's central to what the work is and what it does. How it operates, what it's meant to do. And I think it's an incredibly powerful mode of addressing many things at once. He also seems very driven to make the most powerful image possible. And I think that's very ambitious and very exciting to see, using the romantic imagery of things like ships and the wide skies and the, you know, the familiar yet not familiar foregrounds. I think those are wonderful. I think that's a very tactile, very, you know, image-oriented approach to things. So I don't feel it's deficient in that sense. And in terms of orchestrating, taking things from different places and putting them together, or taking things from different times and different exposures, I think it's a wonderful octopus-like way of getting at different ideas and putting them in one place very quickly. It's not good to necessarily to compare works of different types, but he did remind me, the images reminded me very much of Thomas Pynchon's writing, where you have times and periods and characters and situations all clashing, you know, sometimes to wonderful effect. They felt very contemporary, like they were dealing with specific issues through the orchestration.
Okay. I felt that the night scenes were the most spectacular. Those were the most dramatic. They drew me in and made me want to construct my own narratives to animate the, particularly the that strange disc form that finds its way into different scenarios, particularly in the waterfall. It seemed a very enigmatic presence, but it seemed therefore, yeah, like a kind of very very low octane surrealism in a way. It was a sort of because it's about juxtaposition and improbability, but I'm wanting to hear more from all three of you, because I'm not really getting much from the show, to be honest. It seemed to be rather clever and academic to me, but I'll just be the fly on the wall and listen to you learned folks. tell me what I'm sort of missing.
He's a young artist. I think this is his third, his third show in New York, but he's, you know, sort of undersung, I think it's fair to say, right? He's new to, I think, everybody here but me. And he's familiar to me, basically, because Richard Moss got me onto him, who's a terrific photographer who has a show coming up with Jack Scheinman, which I'm plugging in February. And he's in a show that, they're both in a show that I have up now in the Canary Islands. So if any of you are going to Canary Islands to get some sun, go see the show. I did a piece recently about Alex Prager, the show that's up at Lieben Maupin, for which I hunted down a couple of Vimeo interviews that she'd done. She gives quite a good interview. She seems very sincere. She's very cool. And she said something in one of those interviews that really sort of stuck with me, and that is that when thinking about photography, she manipulates quite a bit, yeah? In fact, I think a lot of her work really is in post-production. As much production value as her work has, I think the post-production is even more important. And she said something like people should find a different word to describe what she and her sort of age cohort are doing, by which I think she didn't actually say age cohort, but young photographers, people under 40, yeah? Because it's not photography anymore. It's something else. And I think that essentially speaks to the liberty with which I think someone like Thomas and Alex Prager dig around with not just Photoshop, because Photoshop is a really kind of, you know, harebrained idea. They're far more sophisticated resources that they're mucking around with to basically change their idea of what images look like. So I think it, in a sense, there's a possibility of looking at, in the glass half empty version, of this work as work that is not speaking truth to materials, but in the glass half full version, David, it might very well be that there is the beginning of a conversation about truth to materials, because the materials have changed. The materials aren't simply the stuff that's coming, the light that's coming through and registering on the film. That's actually not the material anymore. The material may be what happens when that image gets in the computer and the way you start mucking around with it.
Yes. Well, then I'd want something more, as it were. I'd want something more marvelous or something more intriguing. At the moment, we're sort of just playing on the grave of empiricism, as it were, because it's that the first look is, oh, these are straight black and white photographs, and then one discovers, and then one thinks, and one is disconcerted, and one is edged a little bit further. But sure, I mean, we I think are all grasping the new reality, which is that post-production, that Photoshop, etc., it has taken photography sort of away from science and back into printmaking. And so it's less about the shoot and more about the print, which for art people I think is great. I love it.
Or to take a word out of Disney, Imagineering, really. I mean, that's kind of what it is, right?
Let's also just point out that a photograph is still not reality, right? I think the artists like Thomas are really just sort of highlighting the fact that it's still kind of a momentary fiction, and it's still staged, and it's still just a moment of a much bigger story, and one of the things, if I'm going to give any kind of critique to the show, I thought, for instance, the dark photograph with the tires, yeah, I thought was sort of a nice study, but I don't know whether I thought it was as complete a work as the others. You know, it felt like more of a test, dealing with the different blacks and the different composition.
That's the one work I was singling out as the most redolent of a scene.
I know, trying to start fireworks right
okay.
now.
Okay. I think maybe the next show will do that for us. Don't worry. Don't worry about the fireworks. Hold them back. Yes.
But then the other one was also the other dark photo with the waterfall and that wheel. Yeah. And I never understood why there was a photograph of the wheel on the back of a truck or whatever it was. Yeah, because that made no sense to me at all. I mean, it was sort of interesting because it kind of quoted the way in the other room, there was a piece that quoted, but and even when I asked the gallery, they had no idea.
You know what? I've seen that picture for about a year now, and I've had exactly the same problem until I saw the picture of the waterfall, and I had somebody next to me basically explaining it to me. The contraption the fan, as it were, that was attached to that, you know, little tractor, was made essentially to go in the waterfall to mimic a drawing. I don't remember by whom now. If you're in the audience, please remind me what the drawing is. Robert, in any event, it's an 18th century drawing. Yep. So he wanted to recreate basically that image. And it's recreated in the image of the waterfall. In the other one, he's basically just sort of testing it out, literally testing it out, right? So I'm with you in thinking that that image and possibly the tires are experiments, which leads me to, again, say that I think where Thomas is at is literally at an experimental stage of mucking around with these new devices, with this new pseudo semi-form, with this form that has yet to be named.
Yeah. Well, the mucking around is what I like, so he should muck around some more.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's, Christina, you enough mucking around for you, or
just the right amount of mucking around. I felt, again, thinking of Pynchon, I mean, I really felt there's a simmering anxiety to these works, and I was thinking the first room. Made me think of sort of the anxiety of image making, the idea of trying to locate the central form, the protagonist in the image, as it were, and trying to create it and then to animate it. So I thought that was an interesting idea. And then I think the second room, it's almost like a motor revving, and then it extends further into anxiety about, I mean, those images are so rich. I'm a little surprised that you find them a bit blah, because I think the imagery is very powerful. A warship is a tremendously powerful image, especially in the context when it's not at war. I mean, it's always exciting to see a boat because it's something that has seen things other than what we're seeing now, and especially a warship, it's either participating in war or going to participate in war. Meanwhile, it's seen on this sunny day. So I think there's a lot of things going on there.
I took pleasure in the scale and the sense of, I also took pleasure, but I was sort of looking at them and thinking, wow, what a complete anachronism a battleship is. I mean, we really are, this is almost like looking at the armor in the Met. This is the warfare of a bygone age. That
did anybody else have the association with like luxury yacht? You know, the Dacus,
the Dacus
yacht, who was that painted by Koons, or like
Venice?
Did anyone, did anyone else have that? Like, because you know, nowadays it's like you go to art fairs and there are all these like yachts lined up, and they kind of have this kind of like, you know, landed ashore, you know, like these sort of big productions. And I have to say, I did kind of associate it just a little bit with that. Well, I mean,
sense that the biggest auction house in China is in fact owned by the military. So perhaps one day we will see the Chinese military arriving at the Venice Biennale by battleship to see what they fancy taking home with them. Yeah, good moment, I think, to bring in our audience. And let me just say, yeah, I mean, I wasn't just picking a quarrel, but I did have some problems with Bangstad's work. But overall, I would say, yeah, it was curious and elegant. And those are good words to bear in mind when we think about one of the artists in part two. Whether or not curiosity and elegance carry across in that work as well. Audience, two shows to talk about, Bangstad and Schulnick, and also some issues that seem to bounce between the two, about truth to materials, about the post-production, and about whether just mucking around with the materials is enough, and enough to convey mood. Yes, and may, as before he speaks, let me just take a moment to say it's wonderful, gratifying always to see in the audience former participants here on the panel itself. I'd sort of shout out for Deborah Garwood and Nora Griffin and Blake Gopnik and perhaps someone else who I can't see. But very flattering when people have been paid to come up here and talk and they come back in the future to listen, and Dennis Carden as well. Marvelous. At least that's four I can see so far. Good. Thank you.
Just wondering if any of the panelists had any discomfort or have any discomfort in general with the tendency of the art world these days to embrace genres, media that aren't natural to it. I'm thinking of animation in the case of Allison's show, and also clay. I see a lot of both forms, in fact, and I worry a little bit that the art world is engaging with these things without knowing their history, without really knowing what's going on. You mentioned the NFB, the mm-hmm. National Film Board of Canada.
Right.
And I remember doing some work on Kentridge and people from the NFB being up in arms that what the art world was praising is this amazingly original technique, and because technique is always mentioned in these cases, is in fact for them utterly old hat, things right. they were doing, as you mentioned, in the 70s. And I'm a little worried about that with the Cholnick work as well, that we're entranced by the quality of her claymation, whereas people who really know the history of animation will say, that's old hat. And I'm worried about that with ceramic, too. I see a lot of shows yeah. of artists using ceramic and wonder, do you know the history? Does this stuff count as ceramic, or does it only count when it's brought into the art world where people are actually ignorant of those histories?
Well, of course, the same is true with Paramount sense with photography. I mean, photography is a craft, and you know, it's that's the almost sort of snobbish division between artists using the camera or using claymation and them out there just quote doing. You know, that's for me with Cholnick. I mean, I enjoyed it; it's lovely, whimsical, etc. But maybe 2 seconds of Life and Pi would sort of blow it out of the sky as far as technology is concerned. So that's always a problem. And art, I'd say.
Well, I think photography has the closest parallel where someone like Thomas, or Jeff Wall, I think is a good example. People don't really call him a photographer, you know, even though really he does photography at the end of the day. But people call him a contemporary artist, and he sort of falls into, well, certain artists fall into the photography category. And you can't always put your finger on why that is, you know. And I think it's a little bit of a sense of the artists themselves, the way they sort of present it. And then I found this when I was doing a studio visit with a young artist recently, and I found myself saying, you know what, if you wanted to show in a contemporary art context, I think this would probably work better. Or like, why are you thinking in a serial way, like a photographer often thinks in more serious, and I was like, what am I doing? You know, and it's like, you kind of catch yourself, but these are real things that people think about. And I think you're right, there's an amnesia that's involved in the sort of the history. I mean, the NFB has such a rich history, especially when it comes to animation, from German animation to, you know, others. But, you know, that stuff is, I think it's partly just not accessible. People don't know where to look to understand that.
The big difference between photography is you could make the argument, I think very sensibly, that Jeff Wall moved photography forward in very important ways, that photography actually was getting sleepy and he did something interesting and new, and that may be the case with other photographers as well. I don't know if you can make that argument with the work in ceramic or animation that's being done in the art world, and that's my concern. Jeff Wall knows the history of photography like the back of his hand, right? So he's really contributing to that discourse as well.
You could about Ken Price, for example, who you know, basically is a ceramicist and an artist. You know, I mean, look, yes, I think you put your finger on something that's important, and it's sort of out there in the art world where everyone seems to be experimenting, but they're basically just sort of like, but often they're not. You know, it's the Annie Albers syndrome. There's a lot of stitching going on, there's a lot of quilting going on, there's a lot of ceramic being thrown, you know, and a lot of it just basically, it doesn't stick. But in this case, Alison Cholnick, I mean, I didn't know this before I went to the show and saw the video, the animation, but she studied animation. And I think it shows. I haven't seen Life of Pi, but I saw American Hustle. I'd watch this. They're not the same thing, but I was tremendously entertained and I was moved. You know, I thought it was a great piece of work.
But please.
I generally see your point.
Yeah.
I just don't think it sticks with Cholnick.
I'm really interested in the question. I just wanted to respond quickly. I always think of myself as leaning a little bit towards the conservative angle on this, you know, really appreciating traditions and forms. But I have to say, I think that, you know, whatever medium an artist chooses to use, if it works, it works. And I don't think that a lot of artists are interested in advancing necessarily. I think that might be a big difference. I don't think Alison Cholnick is trying to advance animation. I think she's very aware of the history, but I think she's being intentionally nostalgic with those old claymations. There's a wonderful essay very quickly by Merlin James from years ago. I think he gave a keynote address about how painting, and he's, I love his work, I think he's a wonderful painter, should be seen as separate from so many other media in galleries. And it's a wonderful essay. The thing is, it's so well argued, but it still doesn't quite work. The fact is, we do see all of these things in galleries together. We see photographs, we see installation, we see painters trying, you know, to do a pot, or we see, I know a painter who joined a dance group briefly. Wasn't the most successful venture, maybe, but people are trying things, and what works, works, and what doesn't, doesn't. But I'm not sure that I share the anxiety that traditions are being disrespected or
not followed. Yes, and especially I would be worried for an appreciation of Kentridge if one has to go to the National Film Board to see whether he's moving it forward or not. I mean, if Kentridge is... Kentridge isn't moving animation forward, he's moving drawing forward, and he's moving looking at the world and thinking about history and thinking about nature forward. That's, and then the best artists use the simplest technology, the dumbest technology sometimes. So, I mean, the choice of materials and then transcending them, that's what we look to artists for, and then we can go to technicians for pyrotechnics.
Yeah, I mean, when you asked your question, my first thought was Amy Silman's animation, because I feel like that's sort of, to me, it's sort of like, okay, like, you know, sort of like that feels like an animation that doesn't need to happen, you know? So, but I think Sholnick is pushes it in different directions, maybe not necessarily technically forward, but I think it's done, it does something really interesting.
We'll have a separate argument another day about Silman. Okay. Yes, there's some other hands going up around the sides, Kathy.
I have so many comments, I'm going to try and focus. So I think for me there's a few issues, one being that we're evaluating works that are in Chelsea Galleries and I think Lower East Side Gallery as well. So we've already set a bar, a standard for each of the artists that are being shown. They're not obscure, they're not, you know, hidden creating artists. And I think that that does affect, when we look at work, how we evaluate it, because there's already been a stamp of validation. But that, the issue with the medium, I agree with David, I think, and feel, or maybe I don't agree, but what I feel is that there's a craft element here, just like a painter that can paint realism or abstract or whatever, there's a craft. And if the craft doesn't take the viewer to the place where there's more than the craft, then that's where the question for me, if the work holds or not, or if the exhibit holds or not. And, you know, if I can look at a work and say, wow, they stitched and they photoshopped and look how well they did it, but if it doesn't take me beyond that craft, then that's all.
Yeah, I think that's a very useful... Yes, towards the back, if you would wait to the mic.
Well, I just wanted to say very quickly, I'm enjoying this tremendously. This is the first time I've ever been to one of these panels, and it's very interesting. I just think that the division between art and craft is tired. I mean, I'm very tired of even people thinking that there still should be one. I think an artist should be able to use whatever medium or materials that excite them. And it's very nice to see in Sholnick's work how excited she is with animation and color and painting, and you know, there's a real vivacity there. So I applaud her breaking down of the barriers.
Well, we'll see how happy you are when we start discussing Wade Guyton as a painter.